Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yes, Amy.
Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, June 14th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, it's Casual Friday. That means Cliff Schechter will be here with us. Also on the program, to point me to some movies to watch over the weekend, Andy Kindler, who will undoubtedly tell us why NSA surveillance is a good thing. Also on the program today, more on the revelations and the pushback of the what the U.S. Congresswoman said was astounding and just the tip of the iceberg. Also on the program today, the NDAA vote to explicitly say that people captured in the U.S., whether they are U.S. citizens or not, cannot be indefinitely detained fails, one which purportedly attempts to provide some habeas corpus may, in some ways, strengthen the ability of our government under the NDAA to indefinitely detain U.S. citizens. Of course, it's passed in the House. That doesn't mean it's going anywhere. In fact, more than likely, it means it's going nowhere. Such is the state of our government today. Folks, there's all sorts of stuff flying out there. Our podcast on Wednesday was cited in a piece by Bob Seska at thedailybanter.com. And it is indicative of the many pieces that we are starting to see to attempt to argue that the revelations that we have been made privy to via the Washington Post, at least in some part, and Glenn Greenwald and The Guardian more so, are nothing new, but the claims are dubious. And let me read specifically what was written here in reference to what we talked about on Wednesday on this program. On his Wednesday podcast, Sam Cedar said in support of Greenwald and Snowden, which let me just say that I'm not exactly sure what that even means, purports to mean. The issue is not supporting Greenwald or Snowden. I mean, that could be, I suppose, and it's certainly something that we would talk about, but that's not the primary issue here. The primary issue is the release of this information. I am quoted as saying that guy, Snowden, revealed all of this to us. Now, I haven't had time to go back and look at what that's in reference to. That's a pretty sort of benign quote. But he goes on to write, in terms of new news, the direct access description is arguably the only aspect of the PRISM item other than the PRISM PowerPoint and the story of a guy named Edward Snowden who leaked it that was unknown prior to last week's reporting. Well, this is to say that I'm trying to think of what the analogy here is. But the fact that we have direct evidence, the fact that the PowerPoint that the NSA uses internally describes as their access to this information as direct access is relevant and is important. Now, Bob Seska may have been aware of all that the NSA was doing. This, he should have told people like John Tester, who said the other night, "I'm glad this came out because I wasn't aware of it." He should have told Loretta Sanchez that, hey, we all knew this. The fact that it caused the NSA to come and tell you that this is simply the tip of the iceberg and you were, quote, unquote, astounded. The fact that we've had two senators who for years have been begging reporters to find some way of telling the story. Bob Seska should tell those two Democratic senators, Ron Wyden and Mark Udall, that this was already known, guys. Somehow Bob Seska has had this information, and maybe we should investigate that. How did Bob Seska have this information? He goes on to say, it's not holding water under scrutiny. We have no scrutiny of this program. This is absurd. It's absurd to say that we have scrutiny of this program, or to the extent that we have. It's only a function of this reporting. It's just absurd. If you want to defend the fact that the NSA, and let me quote from Greenwald's response to this. It's not a direct response to these charges, but he goes on to say, and there's been a lot that's apparently made of this direct access, that apparently the NSA is incorrect in its own internal documents. And we know that the NSA is incorrect according to its own internal documents because the NSA has now said that's incorrect. And the tech companies, which are by law, not allowed to disclose this information, are also denying it. So the idea, in some way, let me just find this piece here from Greenwald. I have it here somewhere. Bear with me, folks. I just saw this as we went on air, and it's pretty, I'm just blown away by the degree in which people who I have some measure of respect are trying to justify this. And it's not even just justify. They're trying to obstruct any scrutiny of these programs. That's really the problem here, in my estimation. I mean, if you want to argue that we are so under threat that there is intense evidence that this has, or legitimate evidence, because I haven't seen any legitimate evidence. The only thing that keeps getting cited is this one Zazi attack where multiple outlets have said there is no indication whatsoever that PRISM was either used or needed for this. We just have the NSA trying to defend this program saying that it was. But publicly available records show that this was not the case. But Greenwald goes on to say, how can NSA officials claim that a program that does nothing more than change the means for how this data is delivered is vital to stopping terrorist threats? Okay, well, let me back up. If all the tech companies, he writes, are doing under PRISM is providing what they've always provided to the NSA, but simply doing it in a different technological means, then why would a new program be necessary at all? How can NSA officials claim that a program that does nothing more than change the means for how this data is delivered is vital in stopping terrorist threats? Why does the NSA document hail the program as one that enables new form of collection? Why would it be top secret if this is all that it were just some new way of transmitting court-ordered data? How is PRISM any different in any meaningful way from how the relationship between the companies and the NSA has always functioned? These are questions that need to be answered. In the original piece that Glenn Greenwald wrote about this, he clearly said that the tech companies denied it. And it clearly says the document claims this. He's reporting on the document. That's all he had was for source material. It's stunning. And these same people are saying there's no examples of any abuse of this stuff. But in that same paragraph, Bob Seska says, we've been aware of the NSA's eavesdropping efforts, including email, for many years now. In fact, the Obama administration, only 3 months into its first term, weeded out several instances of unwarranted NSA eavesdropping. Well, I'll talk to Cliff Moore about this, but Bill Scheer went on Lawrence O'Donnell last night, based on a piece he wrote, I guess arguing that these programs are liberal in some fashion. I'm not sure what difference it makes, how you, what adjective you place on them, whether they're liberal or not. The programs themselves should be analyzed for their value and for what they do in terms of potentials for abuse, expose us, all of us, to potentials for abuse. Abuse both in terms of our privacy, abuse both in terms of who is defined as a terrorist, and in terms of building an entire secret law regime. It's just bizarre to me to watch this unfold in this manner. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Cliff Schechter! But before we get to Cliff Schechter, of course, we need to do this.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
We are back. Cliffy, welcome to the program.
Why, thank you, Sammy. How are you?
I am well. I guess I'm a little bit agitated. Just part of it is obviously I'm lacking sleep, as per always these days. But I'm just sort of stunned. As we see this information about what the NSA has been up to, when we hear people like John Tester say, I'm glad for these revelations because I didn't know any of this stuff. When we hear Loretta Sanchez walk out of a meeting with the NSA, go on television, and choose her words very carefully and say she's astounded at how broad what the NSA is doing, and that we have seen only the tip of the iceberg, that I don't know. I'm just shocked at the virulence of the attacks on, and look, we don't know who Snowden is. Granted, the guy obviously, has.
Well, I've learned important things about him from the New York Daily News, like that he liked donuts after sex, which I think is a very important part of this.
The guy likes donuts after sex. He may have lied about his education to the CIA and the NSA. Now, that may or may not be true, but it does raise the question, excuse me, can the CIA and NSA not find out that a guy lied on his application to them about where he went to school? That just seems even more bizarre to me.
Not bizarre as much as losing confidence by the minute.
I mean, clearly we don't know much about Snowden, but the idea that, we have found that the guy claimed to have gone to this community college and never showed up. He didn't go to, something's wrong here. Yeah, something's wrong here. I'm not convinced the guy isn't still working for the CIA. But that's part of that should be more reason to be digging into this story, not a reason to say, hey, nothing new here. There's nothing legitimate here. I mean, the guy clearly worked at Booz Allen. The guy clearly had access to NSA data. If the guy is some type of Chinese spy, as the NSA would have us believe now, or something, then we should be looking at this information and finding out. Maybe you shouldn't be giving access to hundreds of thousands of private contractors for this information, who you don't apparently have the ability to check their freaking CV.
I know. That's kind of a problem. And it's sort of like maybe they're just choosing the least of the bad options here, but they're not really thinking this out, because if you're telling me that this guy is a Chinese spy, then I'm going to tell you that he was a temporary worker, right, on a temporary contract at Booz Allen in freaking Hawaii and had access to stuff like this. I mean, throw aside everything else that we've learned, that in and of itself should be a serious problem. Should lead a lot of people to rethink who has access to what. Come on.
I'm not convinced this isn't the main point. I mean, there's so many different aspects of this, but the idea, those aspects, like, we don't know who this Snowden guy is. He seems to contradict himself a couple of times. He seems to have lied to the NSA and Booz Allen.
But anyway, give him access to, President Obama's emails. What the hell?
I mean, this is just bizarre that is being used as a way of saying there's nothing to see here. Because this guy was able to lie his way through the NSA for 5 years. One would expect that this would actually be like, hey, this is a thread we should be pulling on. Not, this is an excuse for us to stop talking about this. It's just bizarre. It's just bizarre.
It's disturbing. But I mean, don't you remember, I can't think, what's his name? Was the big FBI, the traitor, was it Hansen? Am I remembering correctly?
Yeah.
I mean, in every one of those cases that have come out, there was so much evidence that the person doing it was like somebody making some, medium level salary who had four cars and a huge house was going around with prostitutes. Or I mean, I don't remember that specific case, but a couple of the guys over the last sort of decade and a half, the two decades, who've been every single time someone's come out and we found out that we had some massive traitor, there were 50 different signals that they were a traitor. And it's sort of like, does the FBI and the NSA and the CIA, do they catch anything? I mean, seriously, this is stuff that you would think would jump out at people.
Yeah,
combine that with all the lists that, all the people that we had that we were watching before various bombings and attacks like 9/11 that we had on, do not fly lists and other stuff. And it's like, you just start questioning whether these guys can do anything right.
And you know, we do know we have a prime example of what is problematic about this, and it's in Thomas Drake, who blew the whistle on what amounted to just corporate fraud and a boondoggle, and you know, the problems of a revolving door, which you know, supposedly is contrary to good government, which I am told time and time again is a liberal value. This story very well may be, or at least a big chunk of it, is at the very least that. But that is being ignored. That is supposedly some reason for us not to pay attention to this. I mean, it is stunning. It is stunning. Rather than use this as an opportunity to ensure that we have more transparency, I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's not inconceivable to me that we could have a transparent regime of laws that authorize this, that can be challenged in a court of law and can be found to be legal and comporting with the Fourth Amendment, constitutional, in other words, that shows clear evidence of both being secure in and of itself, subject to checks and balances that prevent abuse, that ensure that we are, in fact, protecting American citizens against in a proportionate measure to an existing threat. All of that, it's conceivable to me that we could have a regime like that. But we cannot do it unless we have more information. If we can't trust that our senators are going to get a straight answer from the Director of National Intelligence, if we have Congress people coming out of a meeting with the NSA saying, I got to tell you, I'm freaking astounded. If we have a senator who's saying, like, I didn't know any of this. Thank God that guy told us. There's a problem. There's a problem in and of itself right there.
And yeah, you'd think that this is sort of an experience one could learn from and maybe improve things. And maybe, as you said, bring things back into balance, make sure there's, I mean, I don't think there's a perfect system. There never will be for this kind of stuff. But at least think about creative ways that there can be more oversight. I think we threw out some things when I was talking on your show last week. And think about different ways that there can be more transparency, and that people that work at Booz Allen Hamilton can't get access to everybody's personal information in the country, because that's a problem.
And if we had some type of also some way of making sure that we all know who we're talking about when we say terrorists, and that when we have a way of making sure that we all know what someone's referring to when they say threat to U.S. interests. These are terms that are so amorphous, and we have seen them employed by this administration and past administrations in such a vague and nebulous way, and with less transparency, there is more opportunity for abuse. And the notion that we haven't been able, nobody can point to a specific case of abuse, is A, inaccurate, but also it's circular. It's the same reason why people can't challenge the constitutionality of this, because they don't have standing to go into court. There's been almost 500 court cases.
A little bit of a catch-22 there, when you don't actually have, you can't get the information to ask the right question.
And I'm just, you know, not to pick on Bill Scheer about it, but Bill was on Lawrence O'Donnell's show last night talking about a piece he wrote in The Week. And on Matt and Mike Monday, I don't know, if I think these guys may try and get Bill on. I won't be able to be here. But Bill goes on, I guess he's making the liberal case for high-tech NSA surveillance. Now, I don't know anybody. He starts off with a straw man. I don't think there's anybody, or certainly not that I'm aware of, that is arguing we shouldn't have an NSA, they shouldn't use technology, and they shouldn't do surveillance. There's nobody who's making that argument. But that
nobody I'm aware of. And if they are, I mean, there may be a couple people out there that are crazy who are crazy on everything else. But I don't think there's anybody out there who's sort of, you know.
Well, yeah, you can find an argument for you know, that also these are the Bilderberger group. But I don't think that's
who
Bill is addressing here. Although he may be trying to throw those of us in who think that there needs to be scrutiny on this program and oversight and transparency into that basket, which frankly I take offense to. But
well, I think you should go kick his butt.
You know what? Maybe that's where I'll go Monday. He'll be on the phone.
We got you covered, boss.
He'll be on the phone talking to Matt and Mike, and I'll be creeping into his house.
You should just call the NSA, figure out where he is right now, and go kick his ass. And then it would be the ultimate irony. You could just be like, ha-ha, I found out where you were from the NSA. Do you like it now?
He goes on to say... He goes on to say, what liberals have long opposed are abuses of power that harm individuals yet do nothing to keep us safe. Systemic torture, racial profiling, FBI infiltration, and disruption of civil rights groups, communist witch hunts, Japanese internment camps, the Palmer raids, the list goes on. In this case, such abuses did not occur. Well, A, I don't know what case he's talking about, but the fact that the NSA feels they have the authority, based on that amendment of the Patriot Act and the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, is in and of itself arguably an abuse. Because we don't know how they got from that law, which at least two senators are on record saying they believe is an incorrect interpretation and execution of that law, and they're exercising this program. We don't know that. We just know that we have two senators who say this is wrong and an NSA that says it's right. And then some vague understanding that the FISA court in secret ruled in a secret opinion that it was okay. That's all we know. That to me counts as an abuse.
But even if there's no one specific incident right now we know of where somebody personally had their civil liberties taken away because of this program, beyond the basic civil liberties we're talking about that are lost, again, like that's a straw man and that's a dumb argument. No offense to Bill, of course. I mean, but this is about the culture that's created around it. This is about what becomes acceptable. This is about, you know, what became acceptable in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s leading to the Church Committee. All right. I mean, about the abuses of power, runaway intelligence agencies that were off assassinating leaders abroad because they just could do it. You know, sometimes in their own personal interest, sometimes in the interest of American businesses that were trying to get into those countries or where they had their oil was nationalized or whatever it was that happened. I mean, you can go through, you know, again and again some of these things that we did, and not even counting the blowback, because certainly nothing bad happened from our involvement in Iran, for example. But I mean, above and beyond that, like, we know when you start allowing these things, they don't just go away on their own. They get worse. And they get worse. And when people, the arrogance, the hubris of power, when people think they can do things, they keep doing them. So to me, to say, oh, well, no one bad thing happened from it yet. Oh, okay. Well, first of all, you don't have the information. And second of all, let's just say no one bad thing we can point to happened from it yet. Well, I'm sure, is that the argument then is, oh, well, then it never will.
And
all this power just go away on its own, because it always does, right?
And we have, you know, Bill goes on to say the NSA has been engaged in this sort of surveillance ever since 9/11 under two presidents of decidedly different ideological outlooks, two administrations with vastly different records on the use of political power. Well, it's
they're different on certain issues on the use of political power. Not true.
Yet not even the most strident civil libertarian has evidence that this metadata has been abused. Well, first of all, this is just absurd. First, we do know that throughout these two administrations, there's been plenty of examples of abuse by the power that has been granted to the FBI, to the NSA, that documented abuse. In 2008, you got NSA people listening to phone calls. You have FBI abusing the national security letters. We know on and on and on that there has been documented abuses, but of course, there's been no opportunity to say that that abuse has been there, because every time somebody goes to court to try and prove it, they're told you don't have proof that you've been spied on.
Right.
And this is just absurd. So, I mean,
oh, and if you want proof? Oh, sorry, that's classified.
Exactly. Exactly. This is, I mean, the reasoning of this is so circular. Maybe someday some abominable security official or political hack will break the law and violate the Constitution with such abuse. Or maybe that's already happened and we don't know. And maybe that person doesn't have to be an abominable security official or a political hack. Maybe they just need to be an overzealous prosecutor. Maybe they just need to be someone who's convinced that the threat is greater than it is. Maybe they just need to be one person like General Hayden who says, we have a directive from the president. We can do this, period. Like Thomas Drake was told after 9/11.
I mean, insularity and lack of transparency has never led to any abuses in the past. So why would this be any different?
Let's just let it go.
I'm sure it's just fine. I mean, there's no evidence that anything's happened yet. Just as at times during the Bush administration, there was no evidence certain things were going on. Oh, boom, suddenly we knew about them. Hey, look, they're torturing people.
Exactly. And the idea that somehow, as O'Donnell was saying, like, you know, all of these examples are from the past. And we have moved past that in our history is simply absurd.
Wait, is that what O'Donnell said?
Yes. I mean, first of all,
so is that why O'Donnell had Bill on? Because he's on the pro national security side of the left.
I suspect. I don't want to impart any motivations here. But look, we know the fusion centers.
But I just been in general. You saw him. If you I haven't watched. I tend to not watch most of these shows, and if you watch the show, maybe you saw him coming out in favor of what Bill was saying. Where he's coming from on this?
Yes,
that's
I actually think O'Donnell's actually trying to position himself a little bit, was actually trying to say, you know, walk back some of what Bill was saying here, which was sort of a shocking thing to see on some level. But that's less the point. We know that fusion centers have shared data on protesters with private corporations. We have seen these abuses. I don't know if fusion centers have access to this NSA information. It's hard to imagine, if the FBI can query it, why these fusion centers, which are set up with similar apparatus, wouldn't at least have some access to this information. We don't know, because all of this is opaque. And to simply say that this has happened in the past, well, the reason why we know it is because time has passed. No one knew concurrently. No one knew concurrently, except for the people who were considered approached with the same ridicule that they're heaping on Greenwald. Nobody knew this concurrently. Nobody knew the day that Martin Luther King was being surveilled and spied upon, that he was being spied upon.
That's right, by the Kennedy. I mean, there's so many examples like that, and none of that, of course, led to what Nixon did. And when I say what Nixon did, like breaking into the DNC headquarters, was one of many things that Nixon was doing.
He goes on to say.
COINTELPRO. Read about that.
Of course. What he goes on to say is, but Greenwald and company fail to appreciate is how these modern technologies appear to be diminishing the temptation for abuses.
What are you talking about?
We are not deporting or interning Muslims en masse. What we are doing.
We're awesome.
What we are doing is we are certainly deporting Muslims. We are definitely spying on them in their college.
We're deporting all sorts of people from Latin America en masse, and we're throwing Muslims into Guantanamo and giving them a one-way ticket without actually charging them for anything. Maybe Bill missed that part.
If you're Laura Poitras, the filmmaker who was first contacted by Snowden, you were being stopped every time you entered into the country well before Snowden made contact with her, because you made a video about Bradley Manning or whatever it is that got them all jazzed up about stopping her and frisking her for an hour or two before she comes into the country again. I mean, we know that we're spying on these people. He goes, we're not infiltrating and disrupting Tea Party meetings. We are infiltrating Occupy Wall Street meetings. We are infiltrating and disrupting environmental activists or vegans, protesting in front of a honey-baked ham factory. Despite multiple incidents...
Vegans can get pretty dangerous.
He goes on to say, despite multiple incidents of far-right domestic terrorism, instead we're employing cutting-edge technology in an effort to pinpoint actual terrorists by soaking up every piece of metadata of any American's communication that exists.
Now, here's the other thing, Sam, and I think we talked about this last week, but if you it's like anything else, you know, when you're doing research on a topic, you don't research 50 topics and then mix it in there. Like, if you're doing so much, if you're collecting so much data doesn't it then make it that much tougher to find the stuff you're actually looking for? I mean, there's, you know, that's just sort of common sense, too. And the truth is I don't feel like I should have to say this, but I suppose, who knows, maybe Bill and I is throwing you and I in to this whole thing. Oh, you know, what is he talking about? I believe in robust, you know, national security. I think they need the right to be able to have the tools to prevent terrorism. I was, you know, downtown Manhattan on 9/11. There are people out there. And, you know, I don't accept that it's all just blowback, too. It's a place where I've disagreed with Glenn Greenwald at times. There are people that just are crazy, that want to do things. Like the guy that walked into Newtown and shot 20 kids, and we don't call that terrorism, but it is. You know, it's a, certainly a form of it. So there are people that are mentally unstable. There are people that are have an ideological agenda, a religious agenda, an economic agenda. You just do things for random reasons. And we need to have intelligence on all of them, whether it's Timothy McVeigh or Ayman al-Zahiri, right? But the point is that you can do all of that stuff and have all of that and still find balance. You can have a FISA court that when there's any evidence presented, gives these guys the right to wiretap with, you know, the 72-hour retroactively. We just need someone, obviously, to be overlooking this process, because if they're granting 99% of the requests and they're allowing these big sweeping requests, then to me they're not doing what they were set up to do. But you know, that BS argument that I'm used to coming from the right, that for some reason that means that I don't think these guys should be doing their job and I don't think there are threats out there. Of course there are threats out there, and I'm sure we've stopped a lot of them. But I'm sure we stopped a lot of them before we weren't doing metadata too.
Right.
The point is that finding is doing good, having good police work, having good investigations, using technology at your disposal, and going after people in a smart and cohesive way that are threats because you have evidence that they are through good intelligence, and you stop them. And yes, if you've got a good reason, you get a warrant, you can go in and listen to people's phone calls. You should be able to, or read their emails, because there are people planning bad things. But again, that doesn't include every single person sitting in the United States. And that just seems stupid. It seems like it goes against the Fourth Amendment. It's counterproductive in how you collect stuff. So, you know, don't throw me into this stupid stereotype you create, because that ain't it.
And the bottom line is, according at least to Loretta Sanchez, we've just seen the tip of the iceberg. And if there's anybody out there who believes that the NSA is going in to this meeting with these congresspeople at this point and showing them the entire iceberg, I got an iceberg to sell you. Because we have already seen that in a public forum, the director of national intelligence is willing to lie, bald-faced lie, to a senator about this. Do you think that when they're not on record that they're going to be telling all the truth here? And so when we create this apparatus that is so sprawling, so massive as to involve hundreds of thousands of private contractors who apparently have the ability to lie on their CV about their education and can't get caught by the NSA and CIA, at least this is what these people talking about, how we can't trust what Snowden's saying because he's lied on his application to the NSA, then we got a big problem here that is far greater than the fact that Glenn Greenwald may be using too much prose in his reporting.
And look, I know there's now the controversy seems to have moved to Glenn and his people's understanding of what the servers meant, whether they had
right,
the access to complete
access.
Servers, or, I mean, I think we should mention this for fairness, or servers where there's just where they had placed information purposely that they're willing to share. And again, that may make some of Glenn's reporting incorrect. It may. But that doesn't mean to take away from this whole story. It doesn't make the whole story incorrect. It doesn't make the collection of metadata incorrect. It doesn't make the sort of culture around the National Security Agency, you know, and these other intelligence agencies where guys can get up in front of Congress and flat out lie. It doesn't make that a good thing either. There's never any nuance to these things. You need to be able to separate things out.
What I don't understand about this question of direct access is, who is telling us that this is wrong? Like, we have, is it the NSA that's telling us this is wrong, or the people who, the tech companies who are by law preventing us from telling us the truth about this? By law, they're prevented. By law, they're prevented. We know this. We know this. This is a fact. So the NSA is telling us that Glenn Greenwald got that aspect of the story wrong. Well, then the question is why in your presentation did you get it wrong? What is it that you think you know that turns out to be wrong? That should be the question to the NSA. I mean, that if there's some discrepancy between what the NSA is saying now and what they say in their official internal documents, that should be the issue. Not whether or not Glenn Greenwald took the word of the NSA in their internal documents the first time. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. There's no logic to that approach by saying that somehow this is wrong.
This is technical stuff, and some of it goes beyond my pay grade when it comes to technical.
Indeed.
My understanding was there people were saying that Glenn's people misunderstood the technology of what they meant when they said servers, and he thought it meant, you know, just the actual. They were able to get a backdoor into the servers of these companies, as opposed to it being a more general term for where they were able to place info that they were willing to share where they'd gotten a warrant. Now, I don't know if that's accurate or not. There's so many things with these stories where it's hard to.
My understanding, according to Dianne Feinstein, is they do not need a warrant for any of this metadata. They don't need any of it. They hoover it all up. They get it whenever they want. They don't need a warrant. And then they only need a warrant, supposedly, to read it. So they're basically creating a library. A library of all the transmissions, of all the posts, of all the calls, whatever it is across, through different mechanisms, they're creating a library where they can go in and study the metadata anytime they want for any reason, as long as they have an internal belief that there's probable cause, which is checked with nobody, so that's a meaningless term. You know, that's like me saying, like, is it okay for me to do this on my show today? Well, I've checked it with me. It seems okay. I'm going to do it. I mean, there's no check there. And then we have to believe that even though they need physical possession of this material and then need to go to a FISA court or some other court to get a warrant to actually look at the content, they couldn't have done this if Google or Facebook was forced, let's say, to keep that stuff. I mean, it's already been suggested that if this is just about them keeping a library and studying the metadata patterns, which they don't need a warrant for, there's no reason why we couldn't pass a law that says, you know what, Google, Facebook, for national security reasons, you need to keep all this data. We will supply you every time we want to examine it with a warrant or a subpoena. We will even pay for you to keep this data if it's too costly. There's no reason why that couldn't have been done.
Yeah. And a specific warrant for specific information.
I mean, a warrant to study the patterns. You know, we have reason to believe that between these dates and these dates that there's a pattern that we need to look for.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just absurd. And it's absurd that there are people who are... I mean, I guess, you know, people are telling me that Bob Seska has had a long-standing problem with Glenn Greenwald. Fair enough. If it's just like a personal vendetta, then it at least makes more sense to me, right?
Well, I haven't read Bob's piece yet. Bob's a friend, just like Glenn's a friend. And so I'll hold off from commenting. I didn't even know until you told me it was out there, until I read it and see what he has to say.
I mean, he's got this update. Reuters is reporting that Snowden may have lied about his education in order to be hired by the CIA.
Oh, wait
a second.
Bob's saying?
Yeah, no, that's what he's citing Reuters. Well, the next question should be, who's in charge at the CIA of checking resumes? I mean, give me a break.
Somebody got a promotion that didn't deserve one, I'll tell you that.
That's just absurd. We had other things I wanted to talk about, dude, but I have been ranting. I want to apologize to you and to our listeners because I don't know if I've let you talk for more than 2 minutes this entire 40 minutes we've been talking.
Sam, the dulcet tones of hearing you rant. It's sweet music for most of us. It's okay.
It just, you know, I came in, I saw this piece, and it immediately, you know, the Bill Scheer thing had been boiling too, and I think that it just all sort of like erupted. I wanted to talk about other things with you about the Supreme Court. Let's briefly just talk about this for a second.
Yes.
The Supreme Court this week came out and said DNA and genes that occur naturally in human beings cannot be patented. Okay, breathe a sigh of relief.
That was kind of cool. Who to know that my DNA is mine?
That's right. Nice to know that we don't get to, we don't have to pay a license fee every time.
I was like, hoping we could just go directly into the Blade Runner kind of scenario.
I guess not. Imagine getting that bill from the hospital. Your kid's eyes turned out to be brown. Good for you, because the license fee for brown eyes much cheaper than green.
Yeah, that would be excellent. So, you know, I mean, it's sort of a sad situation. It's kind of like what happened with the Health Care Act, where we had to be like, yay, a victory. We won 5-4 for them to actually, admit the Commerce Clause still exists.
Right.
It's kind of like on this. You'd think this would be an easy one, but with this Supreme Court, one never knows. So I guess you have to kind of lower your expectations and be like, all right, you got to be kind of happy with it.
And
you don't know what else to do.
I had one listener who emailed in, suggested that maybe part of the ruling, which said you cannot patent an abstract idea, might be of benefit to me as I do a podcast. So that podcast troll, the patent troll who wants to claim that he came up with the idea of sending serialized audio segments to personal uninvented music players someday in the future, can't force me to pay a license fee. But what I want to talk about is over the next two Mondays, I believe it will be, we will hear from the Supreme Court on, in particular, two rulings that I think are going to be huge. One is DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, which the speculation is the Supreme Court is going to strike that down, basically say that the feds cannot have a federal prohibition against same-sex marriage. And most people, it seems like there's a likelihood that they're going
to
strike down.
I think they'll leave it up to the states.
Section 5, exactly, on DOMA.
In which case, if we don't get something passed federally, Alabama should have gay marriage by about 2092.
Exactly. Well, but the thing is, I think they will have to respect the marriage of...
Right, if somebody gets married somewhere else and moves there.
Indeed.
Right, you move, yeah.
And that would be obviously a welcome change.
We could just start having gay couples moving to some of these states just to piss them off.
Yeah, I don't know if I would want to.
Yeah,
some of those
not.
States, it would be fair.
The whole white sheet thing is a little scary.
You'd have to do like some type of homesteading act. Maybe some type
right.
of like gay-steading act.
I feel like if you and I went on a road trip down there. Hi, this is Sam Cedar, and I'm Cliff Schechter. Nice to meet you. We killed Jesus. Hope you're doing well.
The other one I want to just briefly touch on is Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. This is part of the Voting Rights Act that requires some states, or I should say, really it's done by county, but it includes
counties, total states.
Counties that also include, I think, Queens. Some states in blue, counties in blue states, people forget that. But counties across the country that if they're going to change their voting laws in any significant way, or if they're going to change their the way that they shape their districts in any material way, need to get pre-cleared by the Department of Justice because
right.
they have a history of disenfranchising minority groups.
Right, and Scalia's already given his opinion on that, he often does. Like, he's already come out and basically said, what, there's no inequality anymore. That's stuff from the past. So, I mean, we already know which way he's voting on that one.
Yeah, he went as far to say in the oral arguments that he didn't think that there was despite the fact that it was ratified again by the Senate 2 years ago or 3 years ago, that he thought that there was too much political pressure on senators to do the right thing in that situation. So
that's
that the
right.
court may
he's
have
now
to
become
step
a
in.
He's now become a Fox pundit already. You thought you had to leave the Supreme Court bench to do that. But it's kind of like I remember when he did that during Bush v. Gore and some of the other things. Oh, in the health care case, you know, when he said, well, the Cornhusker kickback got
right.
it passed. And it's like, why are you talking about that? You're a judge. You should be looking at law. Shut up. But he admits he basically he plays the role of a judge, but he can't stop himself from admitting constantly that he's actually a politician in a robe, or he wouldn't bring up things like that because they would be irrelevant. How a bill gets passed is irrelevant. Whether it's constitutional is what matters.
Right. It's true. And the idea that there's horse trading somehow invalidates a bill. We would have no laws in this country.
Right, because that's never happened in the past, right?
Just absurd.
Maybe he should watch the movie Lincoln.
Indeed. All right. Well, Cliff, I wish we had more time to talk about that because those are two important cases. But we will talk about it next week at Netroots Nation.
That's right.
Where we will be talking face to face. Old school.
Old school, man. Old school. We have to decide if it's Thursday or Friday so we can let the wonderful listeners know.
We will. I imagine it'll be Friday, but maybe we'll do it Thursday. We'll see.
They can all know how to avoid me.
All right, Cliffy, thanks so much. I appreciate your allowing me to vent today to you.
Dude, I've had a baby before in that age. It's necessary, Sam. It's catharsis. You got to let it go.
I know.
Let it fly, baby.
I'm glad I didn't explicitly blame my son for all of this.
Only 40%.
Right. I'm glad I didn't call Bob Seska Saul Seska. That would have belied my point.
Ooh, that's a nice alliterative name.
I'll talk to you soon. Cliff Schechter, everybody. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to the one and only Andy Kindler, who I'm going to have him comment on this audio from a Maine state representative, on the difference between men and women. Perfect. We'll be right back after this. We are back, Sam Seder, on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program the one, the only, Andy Kindler. Andy, welcome.
The iconoclast, the man you can't pin down. You don't know where I'm coming from.
It's not just that I don't know where you're coming from. I don't know how to escape you. Every time it seems like I turn on my TV, you're there.
Well, yeah. You mean I'm ubiquitous?
Yes.
Come on. A lot of comics wouldn't know a word like ubiquitous.
All right. Look,
I throw it around in casual conversation.
Let's cut to the quick here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I was a little late in. I'm catching up on my episodes of Maron. What's it like to work with this guy?
With Mark Maron?
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Sam, what is it with you? You ask a question, then you go away emotionally. Come on. Stick around for the answers, Sam. What are you, reading Newsmax while you ask me a question?
No, I want to know. What's it like working with Mark Maron?
I love working with him. I love the show.
Listen, don't beat around the bush. Get to it. Let's hear it.
What's that?
Come on. Be honest.
I love him.
Yeah.
And I think the show is a heightened version of him, but it is him. So I think it's a victory for us all.
Do you really think it's a heightened version? Because I think they're dialing it back a little bit.
It is him. He does have all these different sides to his personality. But I enjoy when you can watch. Like, you know, my objection to Curb, I always made Curb Your Enthusiasm. It starts out, you're watching it, it's good, and then the next scene, he's on Mars somehow. This show, I think, is able to keep the tone in the right area so that you're engaged the whole time. What am I, a critic now? Who am I?
Excuse me. I think there's a consistency of tone, but I mean, now you obviously spend a lot of time with Mark when he's not on the show.
We're tight, as we say in the business.
Yeah, you travel with him.
I travel with him. I'm his valet.
Right, you're his valet.
I don't have to do all the odd jobs. I just do them because I care about him.
Do you have any doubt that the executives didn't look at the scripts and say, Mark, we have to tone you down, make you less, a little bit less. We have to tone you down a little bit because this is just too much for the audience. Like, when you say it's like a heightened version of him, I think it's just the opposite. I think it's a more sort of like a toned down version of him so that people could watch.
So you think if they showed him unfiltered, unfettered, he would be, what would happen exactly?
It would just be too difficult. People wouldn't be able to watch a full 23-minute episode.
Yeah, but IFC, they seem to let people do what they want. And I'm only saying these type of things because I'm hoping to get some kind of show over there.
Oh, I see.
People tell me every day.
So in other words, this is just a beet sweetener for you. You're just going out there to basically, you're not even close to telling us what you really think about any of this.
I have my own sizzle reel, if that helps.
Now, Andy, you are famous on this program as being a bit of an Obama bot. And
I love Obama. I've been working on my Obama bot. Well, I'm not Obama bot, but I've been working on some of my Obama bot. I'm going to make him more insulting now. Kiss my mainframe, Sam. kiss my the media can kiss my posterior plate on my gizmo.
Well, you've really been brushing up on your techno speak.
Well, it's the way, because I don't ever go blue, so it's Obama bot's way of going blue.
I see what you're saying, do you, it doesn't sound like you even own a computer. Do you have a remote control for your television?
No, I still have do you remember those cassette? They used to be able to have, I have a 4-track cassette studio. I can put 4 separate tracks down.
Oh, really? You've already got up to a 4-track.
Yeah, and I also have a Dr. Rhythm. Sam, if I could segue into old-style music equipment.
Please.
Phase shifters, MXR distortion pedals.
Wow, were you in a band?
A flanger, a chorus, like the guy in the Police had.
Wow, Obama bot goes retro. Now, so what do you make of all this? What do you make of all this NSA snooping and these massive programs to surveil us and the privatization of it.
I'm not concerned. Here's the thing that bugs me. I mean, and let's get serious, Sam, as if I've been hilarious so far.
No, let's tone it down.
I'm gonna get down to brass tacks, whatever that means. No, the thing I don't like is when people are already saying what kind of person this guy Snowden is. I don't understand how people think that he's a hero or how any idea why he's doing anything. The other thing that bothers me is that anybody who leaks now is Daniel Ellsberg with the Pentagon Papers. Daniel Ellsberg was releasing things that had to be released because the government was lying to us about Vietnam. That doesn't mean everybody who leaks is a hero. Of course you agree with me, Sam. I've made another solid point. You can't come back. This round goes to Kindler. On to the bonus round. Round two. What can you come back with, Sam?
Turn on my. We are experiencing technical difficulties, folks.
Snowden snowed us. He snowed us, Sam.
Can you hear that music? Can Andy hear the music? Okay. No. First off, anybody who leaks you're right, is not necessarily because they leak something. Is not necessarily worthy of praise. I will tell you that Daniel Ellsberg disagrees with you.
I know. That made me very nervous. That made me turn on Daniel Ellsberg. And I have posters of him on the wall, along with my Sonia Johnson posters. I know no one knows that reference. I was a big Ellsberg fan. I thought I liked him even more than the Berrigan brothers, if that's possible. Yeah, and I love them. But he's wrong about this because he knee-jerk. And let me tell you something. I know very little about anything, so you could probably defeat me with facts. But he stood up for that Bradley Manning. How did he know? What does he know that Brad? Don't you think people actually could have gotten hurt from the Bradley Manning leaks?
I mean, there's no evidence that anybody did.
And I know you're a huge Assange fan. I mean, don't get me wrong.
I'm not, I'm sort of agnostic on Assange. I'm more interested in the work that he did.
But can we both agree now? We do both agree. The one thing now, see, I've had mixed feelings on Greenwald, but the one thing I love Greenwald, what he did was when he stood up to Bill Maher on his show about the Muslim bashing.
Yes.
That was the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yes, that was fantastic.
And you're not a Muslim basher, right, Sam?
No, not at all. I mean, I occasionally hand it to the Jews.
This is not a school of arguing. I don't think it's a school of debating where I go, you're not a person who's a terrible man, are you?
Look, I think that it is a little bit early to say that Snowden is a hero. I do think that what he did was incredibly helpful. And definitely, arguably heroic in some respect. I mean, the guy has thrown away his life, I think, you know, he may be. It's quite possible. Michael looks at me and with the sort of some type of jaundice. Maybe he's going on to a better life. Who knows? But I think the guy is going to end up one way or another, probably in jail or at least unable to ever visit his family again. Maybe he was alienated from them. Maybe this is something that I should contemplate. But,
are we talking about me now? Because this sounds very similar to my own story with my own family.
Yes. I didn't leak
anything. I told one thing about my aunt Rosa that got everybody's nose in a bunch.
One bad joke at the last Seder and you're just never can visit your folks again.
I came up with the name Rosa because I didn't want to, that does not sound like a Jewish lady's name. I didn't want anybody specifically in my family.
Oh, I see.
That's
you were even afraid.
I don't uncover.
Do you really
stuff.
Think that any of your aged relatives listen to this program?
Well, they don't even listen to themselves. They don't listen to anybody else when they're speaking. And even if they had a radio on, my entire family is too self-absorbed to find out.
But let me ask you this. Okay, so you don't like I think the personalization about Snowden is definitely secondary. There's a lot of questions about this guy. But nevertheless, the information that he's put out there is, I think, well, you know, if we believe a handful of senators, very important for the American public to know. So
those were all approved by both houses of Congress, Sam.
Well,
every year, everyone is in the loop. The FISA court is the best court we have. FISA, both Mr. FISA and his wife, Mrs. FISA, have been abreast of all the situations. Nobody would rubber stamp this type of thing.
Now, Obama bot, let me ask you this.
Thing.
What do you make
yes.
of Ron Wyden and Mark Udall saying that they believe that the government, via the FISA court, is interpreting the FISA, the amendment to the FISA, in a way that is incorrect and would be shocking to most Americans? What do you make of that? Despite the fact the law was passed, the issue is here is how that law is being interpreted and executed.
If they have a problem with Susan Rice, if McCain has a problem with Susan Rice, he should come to me. Come to me. Don't go to her. Come to me. Okay, Obama-bot maybe went on the wrong tangent there.
All right.
Obama-bot having problem with humor module. Humor module. Humor module not working, Sam. All these folks may have their own opinion. I want to hear this. I would like to have a healthy discussion about this, but I would not like to have this right now. Maybe, have you heard about my shield law? Shield law, journalist shield law, all journalists will have a shield. You cannot imprison the journalist, he will be able to show you his shield. You cannot go within 5 feet of his shield. Obama bot is not laughing. Obama bot has been having problems with his audio module.
All right, Andy, let's turn to another topic that I want to play you because this it is so great that we have a professional, and not just a professional comedian, a massively, massively successful comedian. To talk about this, we're changing subject here. I want to set this clip up for you, Andy, and I want you to react to it. Okay?
You got it.
In Maine, in the state legislature, they are debating as to whether or not to accept the expansion of Medicaid that is available for all states under the Affordable Care Act. The Supreme Court said that the states were not obligated to accept this expansion. We know that the federal government will pay 100% of its cost the first 3 years. Then after that, 90% for several years. And then perhaps it may settle somewhere down in the 70s or 80s in terms of percentage. But it could be a savings for the state ultimately anyways, because you have more people who are on who are getting health insurance, and it cuts down medical expenses. So a Linda Sanborn, Democrat, a retired family physician advocating for accepting these federal funds, goes up and speaks. Following her, Representative Ken Fredette comes up and responds in this fashion, and it's important that we have a comedian here, because this is one of the oldest comedic rubrics, perhaps, paradigms that we know. Here it is. Let's listen to what he said on the floor of the state, the main state house.
As I listen to the debate today and earlier debate on this bill, I can't help but think of a title of a book, Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. And it's a book about the fact that men sort of think one way in their own brain, in their own world, and women think another way in their brain, in their own world. And it really talks about the way that men and women can do a better job at communicating. Because if you listen to the debate today, in my mind, a man's mind, I hear really two fundamental issues. From the other side of the aisle, I hear the conversation being about free. This is free. We need to take it, and it's free. And we need to do it now. And that's sort of the fundamental message that my brain receives. Now, my brain, being a man's brain, sort of thinks differently. Because I say, well, it's not. If it's free, is it really free? Because I say, in my brain, there's a cost to this.
There you go.
Oh, my God. I love... You know, first of all, I always tell the young kids, keep those references current. You know what I'm saying? Because there was a book called I'm doing with Obama. I'm sorry. That's the way it sounds. Hey, he goes, there was a book called Iron John that many of you. Is anyone familiar with this book? Robert Bly? Anybody at all here in the main state house familiar with these books?
I like how he's is attempting to have the sensitivity to cloak his misogyny in the cover of a book that says we're just different. So when that lady gets up and says it's free, she's an idiot because she's a lady. But when I get up here, I go, aha, wait a second. This could cost some money down in the future. And that's because I'm a man.
He could say hey, I'm from Saturn because I'm going to run rings around your argument at this point.
Unbelievable. Well,
men are from a man. First of all, you know how everything on Venus. Don't try. If you're a guy, don't try and ask for directions on Venus. You're not going to get anywhere.
That lady got here on her own, and I wouldn't stop, and that's why I was 15 minutes late for this debate.
I wish I'd been on the floor of the main. What was the reaction? Do you have visuals on that?
I think people were laughing in the background, and I don't know if they were laughing like, yeah, he's right. My wife, I can't even.
this guy knows what I'm talking about, right?
Hey, let's go. Who we're going to Hooters after this? Who's with me?
You know how men never like to go walk around craters? Okay, they can't all be gems, everything I'm saying.
But every time you travel to space with a woman, it's like, come on, honey. And she's like, does this spacesuit make me look fat?
Oh, man. God. Venus.
Yeah, tell me about it. Men are from Venus and women from Mars, and I want to know who the Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Who the fuck is from Earth? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, you know what? Let's get all in the same solar system. You know, scientists just proved, though, that, and this guy just came out earlier today, that scientists just proved in the laboratory that there really are no differences between men and women. It's all a myth.
There you go. All right. Well, look, we only have a minute left here because a couple minutes here, I should say, because I could talk to you all day, Andy, and I think you know that.
I loved you, Sam. You know, and I often think when all these things are happening in the world, I say to myself, how would Dylan Radigan make all this about himself? What's happening now?
Hey,
would he do on his organic farm up in Maryland?
Oh, come
or whatever
on. You can't take issue with that, can you?
He's growing libertarians on a some kind of a lumber farm.
I don't know if he's a libertarian. I think that his political ideology is still forming in some respects. But let's stop talking about Dylan Radigan for a moment. And why don't you tell me now? Are you aware that I had another child recently?
I was aware of this, but I forgot it. How old is your child? Is it a boy or a girl?
It's a three-month-old boy.
Oh, my God. Congratulations. That is so fantastic.
Yeah.
And I hope you're not indoctrinating him with your...
What? The politics?
You know, with your liberal agenda.
Oh, no. I named him Saul. I'm in no way indoctrinating him.
And if he if he wants to believe in God, let him believe in God. I am anti the atheist movement.
I'm not pushing atheism. I mean, we do have a little bit because I am. I do have some strains of atheism in me, and yet I am still relatively religious, and that creates conflict with my wife in some respects. Even though she's not religious, she does believe in God, and so. It makes for some very
Oh, so she's
confusing.
Personally spiritual.
She's personally spiritual, that's correct.
But she's not were you both raised Jewish?
No, she was not raised Jewish at all. She was raised basically without religion and practices Buddhism.
See, now Buddhism, who can argue against Buddhism?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's plenty of ways to argue against it. I certainly do, but
Well, maybe I shouldn't ask questions that have answers that I don't like.
I can tell you all those arguments are basically just sort of surrogates for other arguments that we're having, but you know how that works, right?
I do know how it works in a certain level.
All right,
I was hoping you would know how it works.
So that said, Andy,
how come you know what? Let me tell you something, Sam. I am changing my stage name to Fizzles. There's no doubt about it.
Fizzles.
Fizzles.
Why?
I start out hot. And I never close strong.
No,
that's my problem.
You're crazy. It's if anything, it's I. If there's any energy that's being lost in this interview, it's me.
I feel like we're Frank Sinatra and Jerry Lewis reuniting after all those years and burying the hatchet that we never had.
What? Who's who in that scenario?
I would like to be never Jerry in any scenario.
All right. So listen. Wait a second. Somebody just asked Michael, and he just asked me, why you hate Louis C.K.? Do you hate Louis C.K.? All right, we're going to stop the interview right there. It, of course, continues for members, but it's no Freebie Friday today, folks. Apologies. If you want to hear the entire show today, you got to become a member at majority.fm. Where else can you get a mixture of talks of the surveillance state and also know what the deepest anger and hatred that Andy Kindler has in his heart? So become a member today at majority.fm. You can also support the show by going to our homepage at majority.fm, clicking on the link, and buying all your Amazon junk through our Amazon link. Click it, bookmark it, buy all your crap there. We get a little bit of a kickback. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade, coffee, tea, chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Next week, Thursday and Friday, I will be live from Netroots Nation in San Jose, California on Monday. It'll be Matt and Michael. Tuesday, I'm not sure what we're going to be doing. We got a lot of travel going on. Wednesday, we'll be doing a pre-recorded show. So until next week, Bye-bye.